Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
At Christian Apostolic Church, through the Angel Food Ministry, you can get excellent restaurant-quality food at a great low price.
This food is delicious.
Angel Food rocks. You gotta try it. You can't buy better food anywhere.
When you think about saving money while feeding your family the best food, you need to think Christian Apostolic Church and Angel Food Ministry, helping families eat better.
Mine tastes that good.
It's really good.
This service is available to all. There are no income guidelines. If you eat, you qualify.
I like it.
You've got to try it. It's really good.
CAC's Angel Food Ministry can accept payment in just about any format. You can pay by cash or money order, debit card, credit card, or food stamps card, EBT. The only format we do not accept is personal check.
The food is delicious.
The delicious menu is available on our website right now, along with an order form you can print right from the website. Check it all out at www.cac.us.com/angelfood. Again, that's cac.us.com/angelfood. Christian Apostolic Church and Angel Food Ministry, helping families eat better.
It's like they say, restaurant quality food.
Angel Food is awesome.
Now, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Voice of Truth, and we're pleased to bring you at this time another installment of A Creation Seminar by Steve Grohman. Previously on the program, we've already played a portion of this series. Steve presents his seminar live hundreds of times each year in churches, public schools, private schools, and at a variety of other special functions. And via radio and television interviews, his voice has been heard internationally addressing this crucial topic. You can visit Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. Again, that's www.creationseminar.net. And we encourage pastors, teachers, school principals, school superintendents, and any others interested in helping children learn the truth about creation and helping people to uncover the lies and deception of the religious movement known as evolution to email Steve at creation@creationseminar.net. What you're about to hear was recorded live in a church setting. The voice you'll hear is Steve Grohman. He's spent the last 14 plus years on the road full time, traveling with his wife Dana and now their son Paul as well, teaching about the crucial topic of creation versus evolution. Let's roll the tape.
Some neat stuff. It's kind of hard to see that picture, but you can see it pretty clear out there. But if there is a Loch Ness monster, it's all it is. It's just a plesiosaur. Loch Ness is about 105 miles long. It's a big body of water. It's about 1,000 miles deep in the center point there. And people say, no way, I've seen it. They took boats and they ran them all the way across with sonar. They scanned down and there was nothing in that lake. Well, something we need to remember. The lake is about 1,000 feet deep in the deepest part. And those radars only go to 700 feet. So the thing technically could have been underneath it and not... It could have been right there and they wouldn't have ever recorded it. Also, there are what they thought were just tunnels and caves and caverns, but they're actually tunnels to go all the way to the oceans and back. The thing could be gone at the time when they actually ran through it. It's no big deal. We know some friends, family in Pennsylvania, and I don't know, a few years ago, they said they went to Scotland. They went out to Loch Ness. They went and visited the whole region out there. And they said, we had a chance to go Saturday or Monday on this cruise ship just to go into Loch Ness. And Saturday was a pretty day, so they chose Saturday. It was just fine, so they said, well, let's go. We don't know, who knows what it's going to be like Monday. So they went on the nice day. Well, they got back, everything's fine. Sunday goes along, Monday goes along. Monday evening, you know, that night, they're watching the news, the local news in their motel room right out at Loch Ness. And the newscast, they told us, they said, this is incredible. Somebody on the boat that they would have been on Monday everybody saw the Loch Ness Monster, and they filmed this thing for about a minute, and they kept playing it over and over and over, apparently on the news that night. And even these people that are there, they know about this stuff. They said everybody was all excited about it. It was just clear as clear could be. But anyway, the point is there's something there, you know, whether it's, and it's not just there. Up in Canada, Ogopogo, Lake Okanagan, the White River Monster, Newport, Arkansas. They're literally everywhere, all over the place. People everywhere. Lake Erie's got these things. I mean, all sorts of different places have these all over the world, not just in the oceans, but even in some of the bigger bodies of water, the lakes and such and whatnot. But even look at this, California's Nessie. This is November 89, Skin Diver Magazine. Now, not too many people get Skin Diver Magazine, but November 89, talking about in this country, pondering the possibility that prehistoric creatures survive in the Pacific. A plesiosaur washes up on a beach in Santa Cruz in this country in 1925. This thing washes up on the beach. This prehistoric creatures idea, prehistoric man, prehistoric time, and all that kind of stuff, we get so used to that prehistoric thing, people tend to believe it's true. Folks, there's no such thing as prehistoric. That's a ridiculous word. There's no such thing as prehistory. I mean, come on. When everything starts, when we pull our motorhome in here, that's history. It's over with. When I was born, that's history. It's over with. It's in the past. When you were born, that's history. When this planet was born, if you will, when God put this, it's all history. There's no such thing as prehistory. They say it's a silly word in the first place. But anyway, check this out. Here's the head of the thing and the body, the neck rather, and the body's off the screen there, off that picture. But one of the guys that saw this thing, Mr. Wallace, he was a former president of the Natural History Society of British Columbia. He says, "My examination of the monster was quite thorough. It had no teeth. Its head is large. The neck fully 20 feet long. The body is weak. The tail is only 3 feet in length from the end of the backbone. Had a bill it possessed. Must have lived on plants. Lived in a swamp. I would call it a type of plesiosaurs." Another witness was a judge. He said he felt the creature was from a prehistoric age, said it had evidence of two short feet or flippers, and probably swam with its head high above the water. Folks, in this country, a plesiosaur washes up on the beach, and not too many people know about it, not too many people hear about it. But all sorts of examples of these kind of things. The Cadborosaurus, they found a sperm whale, they cut the belly of the thing open, and there was a caddy fell out. I mean, many accounts of these kinds of things. How about Lake Champlain? We have a little place up here in northern New Hampshire, between Vermont, northern Vermont and New York over here, there's a body of water called Lake Champlain. When Samuel de Champlain discovers this lake, he wants to go out into the water. The Indians said, "Don't go out there. The water horse might get you." But anyway, he went out there anyway. Many accounts of people, the Lake Champlain, Champ, they still see this thing, even still today. This book, Champ, Beyond the Legend, by Joseph Zarzynski. I've talked to Joseph a few times. He's sort of a strange guy. He's a treasure hunter, and sort of the sea monster, lake monster thing is kind of like what he likes to specialize in. If you go up to Lake Champlain, whether you look at one of the brochures for the cruise ships or the ferry boats, they all have Champ on there. Everybody knows about it up in that region, as a matter of fact. On the back side of the brochure of the boat, the Spirit of Ethan Allen, look what it says on the back side of the brochure. This is on the brochure advertising the boat. Just kind of keep that in mind. Whatever the occasion for your voyage, keep your eyes peeled for the legendary Champ. In July 1984, 70 passengers on the Spirit of Ethan Allen made the largest mass sighting ever of the lake's native serpent. 70 people. That was back in 93. And again, they keep putting it on the back side of the brochures, and we haven't been there in a few years, but I mean, it's on every one of them. And it always has been. It still is today. You can look them up online, but the point is still the same. Look at what it says, 70 passengers. Now, folks, let me ask you a question. How do you convince 70 people that don't even know each other, all different walks of life, that they didn't see something that they know they saw? Or how can you convince them that they saw something that they know they didn't see? I mean, how can you do that? See, there are many examples of those kind of things. If you're a Christian, you may even have the same problem, and you don't even realize it, about something else. Now, think about it. Check this out. Jesus Christ, now I understand he went willingly to the cross, okay? But look, the net effect is they killed him. He's in the grave, and he comes back out. He comes out, the Bible says he was walking around for 40 days after he died. He was seen, the Bible says, by over 500 brethren at one time, women, children, more before, after, and all that kind of stuff, and other people. He was seen by perhaps thousands of people walking around after he died. And people still to this day deny the resurrection of Christ. thousands of witnesses, people, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of witnesses. People still deny that event right there. Sometimes folks, you know, sometimes people say, well, I got to see it before I can believe it. Well, sometimes people need to believe before they can see. Wow. See, sometimes it's the other way around. We need to keep that in mind, you see. But nevertheless, how about the pterodactyl? Kangamato in Africa, they call him. Ropen in Papua New Guinea, it is. It's just this big giant thing that flies around up there. It's no big deal. Where these kind of things are, it's no big deal that they're there. It's only a big deal to people like us who've been conditioned to believe that those things died millions of years ago. That's all. But they're still around. In fact, speaking of Papua New Guinea, look at this. These yellow areas here are little squiggly lines. These are motorable roads. Papua New Guinea gets none. I mean, most of it you can't get around in. You can't even get around even if you wanted to. It's just uninhabited, uninhabitable. But yet, if there's something still alive, it would just live in the regions where it doesn't get messed with. That's all. It's not all that hard to figure out. We were doing a seminar one time, and this fellow comes up to me, Tom Coleman. He's a missionary out to Papua New Guinea. And he says, Steve, I want to talk to you a minute. And he says, he introduced himself, his family, a bunch of kids and everything. Had a good time with this fellow. But anyway, he says, I'm going to give you a copy of a newsletter I wrote. He said, we've got out in Papua New Guinea, we've got the long-necked dinosaur. He is still out there. I've never seen one, but I'm absolutely convinced of it. Too many people that I know that are just honest as can be have seen this thing, or their parents have seen it or something like that. So anyway, he gives me this. He said, churches dropped supporting me after I wrote in my newsletter that dinosaurs are still alive in Papua New Guinea. He said, some people thought, man, this guy's gone kooky or whatever, you know. He said, I guess I could talk to you about it though, huh? And I said, yeah, I'd like for you to talk to me about it, you know. So I talked to him for quite a while about this issue. But anyway, he gave me a copy of his newsletter. And the name of the thing is Tungi Ungi Ungi Ungi. I said, well, you know, that might be part of the problem right there, you know. We shouldn't be saying things you don't know what they mean. You know? How about the giant ground sloth? They're still alive and well. There's still some 500 pounders running around in the Amazon region. They're still around. Many animals. In fact, we talked about the a coelacanth, 70 million years ago, went extinct. Well, 1938, they caught one. The octopi, 25 million years ago, they say they went extinct. A whole herd was seen in 1901. There are many animals that used to be considered extinct, but yet they're still alive today. Do you know until 1861, the gorilla was only considered a mythological creature since Roman days? 1861? Do you realize we knew about a dinosaur 20 years before we knew about a gorilla on this country, on this planet? I mean, they're just, it's not that big of a deal. The giant panda, the snow monkey, the Manchurian brown bear, things that are basically living fossils, things they used to teach were extinct, or still do in some cases, that are really still alive with us still today. How about January 94, Discover Magazine looks at showing this ground sloth swimming. Says it was a lazy swimmer. The sloth swam in the ocean. Now here's the thing, look what it says. They found some of the fossils among the remains of undeniably aquatic animals, such as fish, sea lions, dolphins, and whales. Here's a question. If you find a ground sloth with a whale fossil, does that mean the ground sloth swam in the water? Maybe that means the Bible's right after all. Maybe that means it was a big old flood that brought the water and the water stuff onto the land with the ground sloth. See, did this one go to that way, or did something happen and that one came this way? See, folks, the Bible says there was a worldwide flood that buried everything underwater. So to find that things are mixed together, that makes perfect sense to me. There are fish fossil plates. In fact, we had our hands on one. This guy wanted a lot of money for this thing, but it would have been awesome to have. But I mean, it shows hundreds and hundreds of little fish and a couple of nice-sized fish with a bamboo tree stalk. I mean, it was a good-sized plate also. But I mean, all sorts of different fern plants and pine trees and palm trees and things mixed with fish and other animals. Folks, the evidence is that everything on this planet was buried quickly under water. Water animals, land vegetation and such, everything the evidence is buried all together. Well, the Bible explains that very phenomena right there. Evolution cannot account for those kind of finds is the point. See, folks, whatever the issue is, whatever the thing is out there, we've got the science because we've got the observation, the testing, the demonstration, the experimentation, the mechanism. We've got all that stuff on our side, not the other way around. But we're always told that all we have is a belief system and that they've got all the evidence. That's not so, as we'll see as the week progresses. We've got all of the science, all of the evidence on our side. And people just don't know how to look at it and that it's there. Anyway, speaking of the ground sloth, the Smithsonian, October 94, ran an article about how Christopher Columbus ate ground sloth meat. In fact, the Indians fed it to him, and Lewis and Clark encountered ground sloth on their trek across in this country. I mean, all over the place these kind of things are found. Just, it's incredible when you think it, when you put it all together and think about it. Anyway, back to Job. Job chapter 41. Now, God showed Job in chapter 40. Let's go back to the context of what's going on here. This big giant chief of the ways of God, the big behemoth. Now, chapter 41, it says here, this is God now still again talking to Job. It says, "Canst thou draw out Leviathan with a hook?" Well, what is a Leviathan? You know, a lot of times, the Bibles will say in the center reference or a little commentary section or whatever, that the Leviathan is a whale or a whirlpool. No, it cannot be a whale or a whirlpool. I think there's good evidence that the Leviathan is, in fact, the T-Rex. And people say, whoa, wait a minute, T-Rex in the Bible? Yeah, hang with me tough here for a minute. Oh, by the way, when I took this picture, I was not really concerned for Paul's safety because this guy was fenced in, you see. No way he could get him. Couldn't happen. But anyway, actually, we're from Texas. Down there, he's the Tex-Rex. If you get too far down into South Texas, well, down there, they call him the Tex-Mex Rex, okay? But it's all the same guy, you know, the big T-Rex. These guys are awesome. Let me see if I can reach up without the microphone scratching and screeching and grab him. Floyd, Floyd's my buddy here. Floyd's been with us for a number of years now. This guy's awesome, awesome creature, the T-Rex. These T-Rex, these animals were incredible creatures when you think about it. The hip was about 10 feet off the ground. The hip was about the size of a basketball hoop. The largest one was about 13 feet high. The head was huge, man. This guy weighed 20 tons. He had these big long teeth. We have some of the teeth and claws and such in the display tray here. Big giant teeth, big giant claws. This guy was an awesome looking creature, no question about it. But you know what? This is kind of interesting. Even a lot of the staunchest evolutionists are convinced that the T-Rex was not the mean, fierce fighter that we've been led to believe according to the evolutionary thinking. He was just a scavenger of sorts. Many of these guys actually think. Well, I know what the T-Rex was originally. In the original creation, and we'll get into this in another session, but the T-Rex in the original creation was a vegetarian. Everything was created to be vegetarian in the original creation. The Bible says so, and we'll get into that. But the point is, you know what you could do if you look like this? I mean, look at these arms, you know? Think about these little arms. He's a real fighter with those little guys, isn't he? All you have to, if you want to kill one of these guys, just catch him while he's running and trip him. Is he going to stop his fall with his arms? I mean, come on. His nose is 6 feet under before his arms hit the ground, you know? But you know what you could do if you look like this? You could walk up to that big old plum tree. Grab a hold of that thing. Take the whole thing off, one big swipe, you know. Everything was created vegetarian. Again, people don't know the way the Bible describes the original creation and when these guys would have existed and such. We'll get into that in another session. But anyway, the animals, the reptiles of today, their teeth, their mouth, and all, they're very similar even still today to what they were back then. They're just smaller today. That's all. And we'll cover some of that stuff too as the time goes on. But look at this, Iguana Quarterly, own your own modern dragon. Well, sure, it's just a big giant reptile back then and smaller reptiles today, that's all. But let's look at this guy now, one verse at a time. Canst thou draw out Leviathan with a hook? Okay, now let's just think about this for a minute. I'm going to grab some of the young ones here, you know, some of the kiddos here. About 5 o'clock in the morning, we'll go down to a lake somewhere. We're going to go fishing. So I'm going to pick you up 5 in the morning. We're going to get out here and here we go. We're going to cast this line out. That's a pretty good cast, huh? Yeah, so we're doing all right. You know, we're just fishing along. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Mosquitoes are still out. You'd think they'd be gone by now, you know? 5 o'clock. Did you bring any coffee? No? Pop-Tarts? Yeah. Nothing? You know, after a little time of this, we're kind of thinking maybe we made a bad decision. Nothing's really happening. It's a bad day at the lake. But then all of a sudden, this little girl right here, she's with us in the boat, you know. She's fishing, and she goes, she says, oh, she says, I could use some help here. Uh-oh. And he looks down at you and says, excuse me, is this your hook? She says, no, I don't know where that came from. Now, folks, remember the context of what's happening here, what's going on, okay? Job is a godly, wealthy, righteous, straight-up, top-notch guy that loses everything. His buddies torment him for 35 chapters. He's crying out, why, God, why? God finally asks him, answers him with, where were you when I hung the earth? What are you worried about, Job? What's going on with your life? And it gives him 84 questions back to back. This happens to be one of them. It doesn't need an answer, but the answer is, can you catch a Leviathan with a hook? The answer is, of course not. I mean, that's the point of the questioning about the, remember the context of what's happening here. And then he keeps on talking to him here, makes supplication, speaks off words unto thee. Yeah, I got an idea. Hey, whisper in his ear. Yeah, that'll get you far, you know? I mean, come on. You can't do this. Verse number 4, make a covenant with thee, take him for a servant forever. Yeah, look, T-Rex, look, here's the house, okay? I need you to kind of come work for me, okay? Kind of clean up the living room just a bit, would you? It's getting really, really just terribly dirty, and I need some help with it, okay? Now, you can't do this stuff is the whole point, okay? Verse number 5, wilt thou play with him as with a bird? Hey, T-Rex, perch. He's not going to do that. You can't do that. Bind him for thy maidens. Yeah, take him home, tie him up, take him home for your daughters to play with him. They'll have a grand old time with this guy. It just keeps going on and on and on. Verse number 8, lay thine hand upon him. Remember the battle. Do no more. God says, you ever tangle up with one of these guys, it will in fact be the last thing that you ever do. You'll do no more. I mean, this is just incredible when you stop and realize. Look at verse number 9. Behold, the hope of him is in vain. Shall not one be cast down even at the sight of him? You're walking along minding your own business. You so much as sneak up on one of these guys. You lose it. Okay, verse number 10. None is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? Ooh, folks, strike one for God. I mean, think about what's going on here. I mean, the context, Job we're talking about here, all the stuff he's been tormented through and all the questioning that's going on. And God shows him the chief of the ways of God. He shows him this Leviathan, whatever this thing is. And he shows him all this stuff, asks him all these questions, says, Job, what about me? He says, hey, I made those guys.
Yeah.
They're nothing. Folks, that's pretty awesome. You know, sometimes things seem overwhelming to us. But you know what? If we just let God handle it, it'll take care of it. He'll take care of it. It'll take care of itself in His timing and His ways and so on. So He will take care of the issues. But, you know, it's just incredible when you stop and think about it. Somebody gave Paul this t-shirt. If you think I'm big, you should meet God. I like that. I like that a lot, as a matter of fact. Folks, all too often, people have, they don't have a good concept of God. God is an awesome God. He's a powerful God. He is real, and He is who He says He is. And it's just incredible when you think about it. But anyway, notice the next few verses, he just keeps talking about his scales or his price. Keeps talking about, questions about it and talking to him about it. His scales. Now look, a whirlpool in the water, first of all, does not have scales. There are no scales there, so it can't be a whirlpool. A whale is a mammal. It doesn't have scales. A whale is a mammal. By the way, that's a mammal that gives birth to live babies underwater. That's pretty cool when you think about it. And most mammals, the baby takes the milk from the mama, but not a whale. The whale injects the milk into the baby. Folks, this is all going on underwater. This is really awesome. It's like God took a monkey wrench and threw it in the works there, for the evolutionist to chew on a little bit. But anyway, it goes on. It says here, by his kneezing, a light doth shine. What in the world is kneezing? You know, they're coming up with an English translation of a Bible. They came across this word, and there is no word in the English language, so they had to make up a word. They had to modify an existing word. The existing word is sneezing. Kneezing is basically the same thing as sneezing, but in the case of kneezing, when you do it, it's an involuntary thing. You have to do it. But sneezing is an involuntary thing. Kneezing is an on purpose type of a thing. You do it on purpose, intentionally, is the point. And it says when he does that, a light shines. Out of his mouth go burning lamps and sparks of fire leap out. Now wait a second. Are we talking a fire-breathing dragon here in the Bible? It says, out of his nostrils goeth smoke as out of a seething pot or cauldron. His breath kindleth coals, and a flame goeth out of his mouth. A flame goes out of his mouth? Folks, is this a fire-breathing dragon right here in the Bible? Folks, it's been there all along. Yeah, that's a fire-breathing dragon. That's a fire-breathing animal right there in the Bible. You know, now, actually, there are four reasons I believe in fire-breathing dragons. Number one, the Bible says this thing could breathe fire. Therefore, I believe this thing could breathe fire. Whether I understand it or not is not the issue. God says it, therefore that's the truth of the issue, okay? But number two, maybe that's why there are so many fire-breathing dragon legends out there. Maybe at one time there was really something that could do that. That's all, no big problem. Number three, it is actually possible to do that. Let me give you an example here. This is a bug. It's called a bombardier beetle. And there's a blob of wax, hot wax, had dripped on him and it cooled and got him anchored off with a paper clip so he can't get away. They've got this thing attached so it can't move. And these guys are going to torment this thing and measure his reactions and what he does and how he does what he does and all that kind of stuff. We were doing a seminar one time in Michigan. And we show up at this church. We always do the same thing, like we did here. We pull up, the motorhome's still idling, and we get out to find out where we're going to park. Where can we get level? Where's power? Where's water? Where are we going to park? So anyway, we pull out, and this is a good size. It was a big church, and we're parked on this side. We're all the way back around the back side over here looking for this, where we're going to be. You know, where can we go to get leveled up and all. Well, in comes this car. This guy's screeching in. It's the assistant pastor. This assistant pastor, this guy is, he's huge. He's this big, and he's got a car this big. And this guy had me in 8 public school speaking meetings that week, and we went together in his car. It was like, could you give me some room, you know? I mean, but anyway, it was amazing. This guy, he jumps out of his car. He comes running up to me. He says, oh, I'm so glad you're here. Hey, come on, you got to come meet my neighbor. And I looked at this guy and I stuck my hand out. I said, hi, I'm Steve Grohman. You are who? I mean, he didn't even introduce himself. He wants to go. He says, oh, I'm the assistant pastor here. And he introduced himself and he says, look, you got to come meet my neighbor. He's just really weird. And I said, well, I'll go meet your neighbor. But look, our motorhome's way on the other side of the building. It's still running. We need to get settled in first, you know. What's so special about your neighbor? What's the rush? He said, well, he's weird. I said, well, come on, people call me weird all the time too. What does that have to do with anything? He said, no, this guy's really weird. We call him the bug man. I said, bug man? He said, yeah, this guy's got 25,000 bugs in his house on purpose. I said, this guy's weird, you know. We got to go meet this guy, you know. So we went over there, but we got leveled up and straightened up and everything. But the point is this. This guy is one of the guys that did the experiment on this bug right here. So it was really cool to talk to him, really neat to talk to him face to face. But anyway, what they did is they anchored this guy down so he can't get away. And then they're going to torment him. And so they come in here with tweezers, and they pinch him on the front leg. And when they pinch him on the front leg with the tweezers, in his little beetle brain, he says, ah, that's the ants nibbling on me again. I can't stand it when they do that. So what he does, he takes his tail, zoop, picks it up in between his back legs, and he blasts him. Fire, 212 degrees, comes out of the bombardier beetle's rear end. Now folks, you got to realize, this guy does not breathe fire. But he, well, anyway, you know what it's called, okay? But the point is, this guy blows fire. I mean, 212 degrees, this guy. It's incredible. Now, you have to understand, they go to school for years to learn how to do this, okay? They stay up all hours of the night diligently doing their research, you know? Folks, actually, this is complex chemistry that takes place here. This bombardier beetle, he's got 2 sacs. He's got a left and a right, and in each sac, he's got an inner chamber and an outer chamber. In the inner chamber, he stores hydroquinones and hydrogen peroxide. When you mix those 2 things, they blow up. Now, he does not want them to blow up in his belly, okay? So what he does, he has a 3rd chemical, which is a neutralizer, which sort of neutralizes that thing from happening, you know, just neutralizes the chemical reaction. Well, now, it does no good to squirt this stuff out if it's got this neutralizer mixed in there that's not going to allow it to work. So what happens, you have to understand, by the way, this neutralizer comes in from another sac and it goes down in, but anyway, he has just the right mixtures of all this kind of stuff. If he gets nibbled on by the ants or something intimidates him, he needs to let this stuff out. What he does is he puts some of that solution in the outer chamber. That's the muscular portion. Sort of like our heart. We have a left and a right, top and a bottom. The bottom, the ventricles, are the muscular part to contract to put the blood to the lungs and to the body, you know? Well, anyway, it's the same sort of a concept, but it does no good to squirt this stuff out if it's got this neutralizer in there, so it's not going to work. So at the last split second, timing is crucial. He has a 4th chemical, which is an inhibitor, and it inhibits the neutralizer momentarily from working. So those 2 can go out on the way out, they can blow up. I mean, this is really complex stuff. He's got 4 chemicals, 2 of them blow up. One of them keeps the 2 from blowing up. One of them knocks out the 1 that keeps the 2 from blowing up, so the 2 can blow up on the way out. Okay? This is complex stuff. The bombardier beetle knows nothing of chemistry. All he knows, blast them. It works every time.
That's about all the time we have for now. But in the future, we'll be hearing more from creation science evangelist Steve Grohman as we play for our listening audience the audio from A Creation Seminar. Listen for it next week. Also, we encourage you to log on to Steve's website at www.creationseminar.net. That's www.creationseminar.net. Make a note and check it out before our next broadcast. www.creationseminar.net.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.